listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flueckiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to today's show, LA Talk Radio, Your Ultimate Life, the show that I host every week to help you hear from me and from many others about how to create a life that you love, life of purpose, prosperity and joy. And I'm grateful today to have a special guest here with me, Arthur Joseph, who has a massive vision. Arthur, welcome to the show.
Oh, such a joy to be here, sitting out in my beautiful backyard in Encino, and you're sitting where you are in Canada. All is right with the world.
All is exactly right with the world. So right before we started, I was talking about adding good to the world, and you articulated at least one version of an amazing vision that you have. And I like to start with, I don't do intros, it all comes out as we talk, but I'd like you to articulate your passion about voice and about raising consciousness and love and stuff in the world with that. So would you say that again so people know what you're about?
Yes, I'll share that stuff.
Yeah, so, that's that good stuff.
Well, as you know, I've been teaching for over six decades. I'm completing my 61st year. And I begin with that because my vision from the very beginning, virtually from the very beginning, has been to change the world through voice. Voice is power. Doesn't necessarily mean big, bombastic. It means authentic, integral. And my goal for all these decades has been to help all those I work with to achieve their own enlightenment and enjoy their own empowerment.
That's amazing. Tell me why voice is such a powerful piece of that enlightenment, you know, that journey that you're helping people. Why is the voice so key to that process?
Years ago, somebody asked me, who's your target market or what's your target market? I said, heck, I sell air. Everyone has to breathe and everybody has to communicate. I myself am a classical singer. I knew at four that music was my life, and at 12 that singing was this manifestation. But it began morphing from there about 18. And to be frank, I own this communication space because I am teaching mastery through communication. I've had the privilege over all these decades to teach great leaders, renowned artists, immense athletes. And artists and athletes in their skill set are in mastery. And that was taught to them. Somebody taught Dwayne Wade, an NBA Hall of Famer, how to dribble. First with one hand, then with the other, then back and forth. Kurt Warner, a Hall of Fame quarterback, somebody taught him how to hold a football and how to pass a football. But who? And I studied singing for a dozen years or more. Somebody taught me technique. But who teaches us to be us? Speech is habit. We don't think about it. We just do it. I teach a great number of broadcasters around the globe. CBS Sports alone is one of my clients, and I was just working with one of the CBS Sports broadcasters before this call and helping them understand that broadcasters don't have craft. It's a generic journeyman's trade. Nobody sat them down and taught them to breathe, taught them how to look at the camera. They're fed with all kinds of misinformation. So this work, Kellen, is designed to give us craft. Teaching that voice is an art form. I didn't just say teaching that voice is an art form. I said teaching that voice is an art form. You feel the energetic emotional impact of that one versus the other one.
Of course.
You spoke about raising consciousness. I'm not raising consciousness. I'm raising conscious awareness. It's a 360. Intra and interpersonally aware. I have seven rituals, as you may know, in this work. The seventh one is three important words, not two. be myself. And the third word begins with a capital S. It doesn't say present. For whose approval? There are schools of thought that say you have to bond with your audience. What a bunch of nonsense. What if I try to please you? Somebody else has another POV. I can't serve you both. We're taught to speak to the last row of the house. Again, bogus information. Because when I do that, I raise pitch. There's nothing authentic about that.
So that's fabulous. And I, last time when we talked, when you were on the podcast, something I really enjoyed, and you just did it again, was the expression and the demonstration of the different meanings that come with both pitch and volume and tempo and all of that sort of thing. And when you mentioned the broadcast, whether it's news or sports or whatever, like most of them don't get good instruction. And you see that because of how they are present. What makes a company come to Arthur and say, you know, we want you to raise our standard, help us do better with that breath, that voice, that communication? What makes them come and say, we got to do better?
I'll give you one example, maybe more than one, but one that comes to mind immediately. Roger Goodell is the commissioner of the National Football League. And he came to me, Vince Lombardi, the Lombardi Trophy in football. He was one of the great coaches in American football history. And one of the things that compelled him to want to do this work was he liked his voice. He liked the leadership that was reflected in Coach Lombardi's voice. And it's a really interesting question because companies specifically don't come to me for the company. They'll come to me for an individual first. The chairman, like Roger, or the head of, you know, EY or Deloitte or some Fortune 100 company or something. That CEO wants my help, or that CFO. But then word spreads very quickly. And everybody wants a piece of that. And so then the company begins to make it available. And then we raise all boats, as the phrase goes. So what I really feel is important for your audience to understand in this moment is that speech is habit, which is why I talked about this and this, et cetera. Speech is habit. We just do it. But I'm teaching people how to do it masterfully. Not to be somebody they're not, but to bring out what's possible. And also, when you listen to me, clearly I'm very expressive in the way that I communicate. But I also literally, as I've said to you before, see every single word on the virtual computer screen right there in my mind's eye. And now that I'm pointing it out, you can see me do it. You can see where I stress a word, where I breathe, what I emphasize. I'm teaching people how to do that because it then gives me my innate ability not to present me, but to be me. Throughout our lives, Kellen, people say, and I believe I shared this with you when we first spoke, throughout our lives, people say, oh, don't act like that. What will people think? Well, you shouldn't say that. You sound arrogant. So if I say, well, Kellen, vocal awareness is extraordinary work. It can help you change your life in moments. That's stupid and arrogant. But what if I say, Kellen, vocal awareness is extraordinary work. It can help you change your life in moments. That's not arrogant. That's my truth. So overcoming all these old tropes, these negative things that have been said to us. If a dancer can't do Sinead's to the left, they don't have a gig. If that athlete can't do X, they don't have a gig. but because we're all the walking wounded. Nobody got to any place in life unscathed. Nobody really notices. I had a client at, I don't remember if it was Deloitte or EY a number of years ago. You know the partner path of those agencies. It's a very rigorous year plus.
You're right.
A partner. And if you don't make it, you lose your job. It's quite simple. There's no recourse. So this one gentleman who had been a math major in college spoke like a UNIVAC machine. Just streaming data.
Right.
Like most everybody says, hey, because our mouths are our fingers and thumbs out loud, we're just streaming data. Nobody's thinking about it. And he was fired. He didn't pass the partner test. But I trained his boss. And so his boss went to the board and intervened on his behalf. And they gave him a second shot. And so he worked in virtual with me for several months. His office was in D.C. I flew there a few days earlier. We had our first and only in-person meeting a couple of days before he was going to start the process again. After the first meeting, they made him partner. I'm not suggesting a style over substance, but in this case, I am suggesting a style over substance. He was communicating better than they were. They don't think like that, but he was. But 6 months later, and this is the truth, he called me and said, I just brought them $1 billion of business. That $1 billion of business would have been lost to the corporation had he not had vocal awareness sessions, because he wouldn't have had a gig. So the goal in our work, Kellen, is not to make anyone into somebody they are not, but to bring out what is truly possible, helping everyone I work with to discover this, who they're capable of being. We're told that every public, this is a presentation. Every Zoom meeting, every podcast, every keynote is a presentation. Bogus. It's a performance because someone is watching or listening. If we look up the word present, presentation literally means to introduce formally, to bring before the public. We look up the word perform or performance, it literally means to carry out, fulfill, to do. A presentation is actually inauthentic because we're seeking approval. A performance is more sovereign because I'm being in the integrity of who I am. Does that compute?
It does completely. And you know what it makes me think about is we're trained from practically the cradle, you know, what's okay and what's not okay with approval and disapproval and all the rest, and all this sort of expectation energetically is heaped on everybody. And what you've described is the undoing, the allowing of, or teaching, helping people be who they really are and allowing them to be that. And what it makes me wonder and want to ask you is, and I know you have dozens, but tell me an example of what it meant or what it changed for somebody. And you just did with that guy that made partner, but inside, to come to the place where they give themselves permission in spite of all that layering and all that socializing, to both be themselves and to be comfortable with themselves.
Brilliant. Structure does not impinge, it liberates. Freedom without direction is chaos. So we create in vocal awareness impeccable structures, breathing, vocal warm-ups. I mentioned the seven rituals. All mastery in any discipline is connected with mind, body, spirit. That great artist, that great athlete, before performing or competing, they've warmed up, they've stretched, whatever it is. But the last thing they do is prayer. Whether it's a team prayer or then on their own prayer. That performer standing backstage is not visiting with the stage manager before walking out. They're in ritual. They're in focus. So everything that I do with clients is building on this notion of mastery. But it's never been used in public discourse before, but it is fundamental to vocal awareness. Coupled with that is this another empty bill of goods fed to us for generations, this one by sociologists, says the greatest fear in society is public speaking. Now, we've heard that before.
I've heard it a million. I've said it even.
Totally bogus, totally inane. The greatest fear in society are actually two fears. Fear of abandonment and ownership of my power. The fear of claiming myself, two words, and not being afraid of what you think of me while I'm being. Imagine that athlete hoping their coach approves or their teammates like what they're doing. It doesn't exist.
I can't imagine some athlete worrying about that.
It doesn't. It's not on their radar. It's not possible for it to be there because they have been trained to be totally self-focused. And while doing so, their body then becomes like a thinking organism. They don't think to move in a certain way or to do this, but they notice when they're doing it because the body's been trained to be aware. That artist singing a classical recital or an opera or something like that, it is 98, 99% technique. While I'm in the second measure, I'm preparing for the sixth measure, and I'm thinking about my mouth and my tongue and everything. But you don't see any of that. All you see is the art. On my website, I have a TEDx talk I did a few years ago. All mm-hmm. you will see is Arthur being Arthur. I've written out this, I think I again shared, I'm sorry if I'm being redundant.
No, it's okay.
I've probably written two speeches in my entire life. One decades ago for International Voice Conference in London, and this TED Talk. Because I like to riff. I consider myself a jazz musician, not to be lazy, but to challenge myself to be in my work, capital W. But this one had a very specific goals. Time frame couldn't be longer than 18 minutes. It was virtually 18 minutes to the second. And I had very specific goals I wanted to deliver on. So I wrote this thing out, and I memorized it. Even the day of the event, I literally practiced it 25 to 30 times. 18 minutes, that's a lot of practice the day of.
That is a lot.
Got to the venue a couple of hours ahead of everyone else with my bride by my side. Went off in an ante room, closed the door, put my recorder on, and kept practicing. Jerry Rice, at one point, was considered the greatest football player ever in the National Football League. I trained Jerry, and he told me one time when he won his first MVP at his first Super Bowl, he got to the stadium. He didn't take the team bus. He got there 3 hours ahead of everyone else, walked the field, got his workout in. When the team came in, he was asleep in his uniform already on the workout table. He already gotten his work in because the concept is the champion does it differently. When people study with me, I want them to see themselves as champions. I was just in Istanbul doing a seminar for presidents and executives from chambers of commerce throughout Europe. And they had lots of other things they could be doing on a Wednesday in Istanbul rather than sitting and hearing me babble for two and a half or three hours. But they chose to be there. Your viewers choose to be here. They could be doing other things on Tuesday at 5 o'clock.
Yep.
So that choice awakens another principle in vocal awareness, that every single thing in life, Kellen, revolves only around two things, to choose to do something or to choose not to. Never matters how scary, how seemingly daunting. All that matters is how badly I want to do it. Even an abdication, walking away, made a choice. But I'm teaching empowerment through voice. So I ask, does that choice empower me or disempower me? I want your listeners, your viewers, to be so compelled by our conversation, even though I rarely come up for air, that they are inspired to want to enhance that possibility within themselves. Not to make themselves into somebody they're not, but once again to bring out what's possible.
You know, one of the interesting things about all that. And as a coach, I talk often to folks about choice, you know, their ability or their willingness to make choices. And you've emphasized that and given them or talked about having both permission and ownership of that choice. We hear so often the phrase, I had no choice. I had to. You know, people say those kinds of things glibly without reflecting on, you know, giving away their sovereignty doing that. And what you're talking about is being aware of and owning the choice to do or not to do something. And coupled with that, the reason you do or don't do it is because of who you are instead of what somebody else is thinking or might think or that kind of thing. In other words, you're owning that sovereignty, and the expression of it in your work is through the voice, but it feels like that voice embodies a whole lot more than just the sound that comes out of somebody's mouth.
How perceptive. Because I spell voice in my books and programs two ways, lowercase v, capital V. The lowercase v is my speaking voice. The capital V is my inner voice. The sixth of the seven rituals is pay attention, deeper listening. We pay attention out here and simultaneously listen deeply inside to this interior conversation that is only available to us. This conversation within us, this conversation between us and Source, we really stay tuned into that because that's part of the integral contract that we hope us to gain within ourselves. And vocal awareness offers something that no other form of mastery offers. Those great athletes I teach, those great artists, they have an off switch. They leave their skill set, they're no longer in mastery. In vocal awareness, there is no off switch. For example, we did this before. I teach people how to not just sit up straight. When we sit up straight, we sit at attention, we hold our breath because we're being subliminally judged. You like me? Instead, we learn to claim ourselves as individuals of stature, taking this golden thread from 3 inches below our navel, embodying ourselves as people of stature. And as I pull this golden thread right up through the middle of my crown chakra, my arm fully extends, my chest opens, my core engages. And I'm not just sitting up straight. I'm claiming myself as an individual of stature. And the first thing the body does is inhale. If I say, take a deep breath, chest rises, larynx and tongue flex. If I teach, allow a slow, silent, conscious, loving breath with your eyes on me that takes 5 to 7 seconds. The chest does not rise. The intercostals expand. The tongue and jaw do not tense. The larynx does not tense. It releases. And I change the word from take to allow, and I return us to our primal breath. This intercostal diaphragmatic breath is the breath of newborn. We access it through love and allow. And it illustrates that that primal breath never left our bodies. It's just been circumvented. So I take us back to this state before trauma began, before reality intervened with how we're raised or what this person said to us or that person, because we reach adulthood and we think this is us.
We do. And, you know, when you were doing that, because I remember both in our very, very first meeting, you did that. And when we had the podcast, I think you took me through that exercise. And because you did, I thought about that a lot in terms of that allowing. And what just occurred to me is you demonstrated that again is when we're asleep. You know, we're not stiff in our breathing. We don't do weird motions or anything. We simply, we allow breath to fill our bodies, and we take it that way without thinking. And if you watch a sleeping person, it is beauty in itself, and the body just allows that the intake of life-giving air in a very natural process.
And it's all organic unconscious.
Yeah.
I'm teaching conscious awareness. So I teach us how to do this volitionally.
Right.
So that, and the root of the word spirit, spiritus, as you know, means to breathe. I'm not a motivator. I'm an inspirer. Inspirare, to breathe into. The Hebrew word neshama means soul and breath. So these elements and a vocal warm-up, for example,
mm-hmm.
are all part of what are referred to as a mastery moment. That athlete stretch their hamstrings for 15, 20 minutes. They do their other things. That singer backstage is warming up, dot, dot, dot. We don't do any of these things. We just show up. So we create this mastery moment, 45 seconds, where we go through a routine, just like mastery people do. But then we build into our process this level of conscious awareness. So one of the really significant trademarked elements of the many in vocal awareness is called visceral language, conveying the emotion of words. And if your viewers were to write the phrase, "I am an extraordinary person," down and just read it, they would say, "I am an extraordinary person." So if you write that line out, and at the top of it you put TG or TS for thank God or thank Source, you write S for stature, in front of the first word, you put CLB dash 5 seconds, because that's the acronym in vocal awareness for a conscious, loving breath. And it's not, it's slow, silent, and loving. And then we mark it up. We annotate it. We put what I call a downbeat, like the accent in Jose on the E. We put that on the A in I am and underline the M. We underline the N in an. We put it over the T in extraordinary, because that's where the emphasis will go. On the P in person. And we put an elliptical line over the whole sentence so it doesn't come out, I am an extraordinary. I am an extraordinary person. And we circle the period or the full stop at the end. And then we'll say, use my eyes. We'll write that somewhere. We create a persona statement in vocal awareness, which is designing the aspirational self. So say we've created that, and I want to be seen as empowered. So I'll write that there. And then we learn to embody that. If I say, watch my eyes, I am an extraordinary person. That's true. Watch my eyes. I am an extraordinary person. Using the eyes actually changes the sound of a voice. Eye contact actually changes the sound of a voice. So now watch me see all those letters and words annotated. I am an extraordinary person. Or, I am an extraordinary person. I am an extraordinary person. I've read the same annotation each time, but I can interpret it 50 different ways. But making voice visual gives me another structural tool to help me stay in touch with myself and the sovereignty, this hubristic notion of being me without asking permission.
I love the without asking permission. So just now you use the word hubris, and often, as you've mentioned before, the hubris is used as an insult. You know, they say someone has a lot of hubris, meaning they brag or they're puffing themselves up. But everything you just showed, demonstrated with both the annotation and the breathing and the eyes and the motion, was all about communicating the truth of being and claiming your extraordinariness, which is true. And it's just it's a fact, and we cover it up. I want you to talk for a second about the idea of hubris, because you've mentioned that, not today, but another day, a little bit. And I liked the explanation you gave about it, because it's a different take on the idea that hubris is somehow an evil to be avoided. So talk about that a little.
Thanks for listening. The dictionary definition literally means blaspheming the gods or extreme arrogance. But every great artist, every great athlete is totally hubristic. Of course, on that stage, my ego mind wants to cross the footlights. I want you to love me and like me. But the moment I do that, I'm no longer in my art. I'm only in my ego. Dwayne Wade, a dear friend, NBA Hall of Famer. Imagine if he was playing, didn't play 1 second. Not any of these athletes hoping their coach approves or their teammates like what they're doing. That's ludicrous. Nor is what he doing, what they're doing, only ego-based. It has nothing to do with ego. Hubris is necessary for mastery. And when I am that self-aware, that well-trained, that self-confidence, capital S self, I make room for everybody else because I'm no longer territorial. But again, out here, I don't necessarily have that gift, that special talent that puts me in that public eye. I'm just me.
Right.
And I've been folded, spindled, and mutilated one way or the other for decades, perhaps. I recently did a several-month mastermind, and a woman in her maybe mid to late 50s, the end of all my courses, extended courses, week-longs or multi-month masterminds, the last session is called Closing Ceremony, where someone, where the participant shares fully embodying vocal awareness, the technique that we learn, something important about the discovery during this time we were together.
Right.
And this woman recognized during the course of our work, and she shared it in about 90 seconds publicly with a group of virtual strangers, that she had been abused as an infant. It had never come out before. But through the work, she was able to get in touch with it. I taught at the Esalen Institute in Big Sur, California for 15, 16 years. It's the progenitor of all these global retreat places. It's been around about 75 years. And it's where the term the human potential movement was created. And in my last book, Vocal Leadership, I speak about one of the chapters that I don't believe in potential. I believe in fulfillment. So I created the human fulfillment movement, the human achievement movement. We all have potential. It's about achieving it.
Right. It's about what are we going to do with that? The history is full of unrealized potential. Yeah. That's legend. So no, of course.
And so this woman, in her closing ceremony, came to me afterwards. She didn't share this in the group. She was put in touch with the fact that her father had abused her as a child. She'd buried it her entire life. And I said, she asked, how should I approach this? And I said, wait till you get back to San Francisco and sit down with him face to face. She couldn't wait. She called him that night. And so she was in her 50s, 60s. How old was her father?
Had to be 80-something.
Yeah. And so imagine the trauma of that.
Boy, and, I guess.
But the point is that it came out of the power of this work. And one of the axioms is, in whatever our walk of life, whatever our intentionality, power develops out of freedom, Kellen. Freedom out of letting go. Letting go out of knowledge. The more information I have, the freer it allows me to become, to release my power, to be myself. And so when we do these exercises, this isn't just some intellectual thing. This is a real craft. And everything that I'm teaching that might be mind, body, spirit is connected physiologically, or I'm blown smoke. That statue opens our chest, engages core, releases tongue and jaw tension, dot, dot, dot. Thanking source, we breathe. Second ritual of love and let go, we breathe and feel more grounded, dot, 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 dot. So we don't just set these intellectual precepts in front of us. We actually have ways of transforming the technique of this work physiologically. And that's what makes such a huge difference. We trap trauma here and in our tongues and jaws. So right now I might be a little anxious about something. You don't know I've just constricted my tongue and jaw. You have no idea other than I'm telling you because I sound fine. But now when I take that tension out of my tongue and jaw, you hear the total difference in my voice. And so we hold it all here. And so I just show us how to get rid of it, man.
So I have a question. Well, several of the examples that you've given have been about athletes, and you've made a couple of points. One is in their athletic prowess, that's when they're in mastery, and when they leave that arena, they're not in their element of mastery, and they're regular people. I mean, basketball players are 8 foot taller than everybody else, but okay, they're just regular people going about their business. But not in mastery. You said that the vocal awareness, the truth is because it's in us, it's part of who we are all the time, and we either have it or don't, we don't turn that off. Why is it, I'm just curious, that these athletes who've achieved this mastery, get paid a lot and fame and whatever in sport, what has driven them to, you know, they're aware of a level of mastery most people don't ever understand. But what makes them know that it's important for them to have this embodied voice, the vocal part of this, separately or in addition to the physical craft that they've created?
It's a really unique question. I said to Dwayne in his first lesson, Dwayne, you're no longer a basketball player. You don't get to speak like one. Sounds arrogant, but I was making a point.
No, but that's what drove this. Like a football, Jerry Rice or Wade or whoever. I mean, I know those guys. I don't know them personally, but I know who they are. And they're great at what they do. And so, like, what makes them think, I need to come and get my voice, my expression of truth through my voice tuned up?
Well, in Dwayne's case, he's a hugely focused man. And his agent sent him to me. And Dwayne's from the South Side, Chicago, fundamentally different language base. And most big men also have these thick covered voices. And that was Dwayne. In our first lesson, I said, voice communication is earning power. If Dwayne continued to speak simply as an athlete, he would be fine in certain situations, but not achieving what he's been achieving in the last 5 years since he retired.
Right.
Hosting the Today Show, being an extraordinarily successful businessman and entrepreneur around the globe, dot, 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 dot. Other athletes come to me to be broadcasters or come to me while being broadcasters. But at the end of the day, sport, whatever their skill set in sport, whether it's track and field or soccer or whatever, that was their identity for all of these years. I was a soccer player. I was ran the 100 meter, whatever it is. They no longer have that identity. So it occurred to them, who am I?
Right. I'm not that. Now what?
Yes. And so I helped them reclaim or discover a different level of authenticity. And I tell them that this work is the beginning. It is the first time in your life when it is not about what you do, but who you are. No matter how talented that athlete is, once the sport or the team chews you up and spits you out, there are 1,200 more waiting to take that place.
Right.
On my website, Dwayne's Hall of Fame speech is there, of course, but also something I'd love your viewers to watch, his retirement speech from the Miami Heat. We'd only been working about 4.5 months at that time. If any of your viewers were going to watch that, also tune in to a 5-year-old interview with him and hear what Dwayne used to sound like. And then watch this. I didn't make Dwayne into somebody he's not, but once again, help bring out what was possible. So we finished writing it about 2 weeks before. We're practicing reading it on this computer, on this laptop, watching words scroll in an app called Prompt Smart. The day of the event, I annotated the prompter, 18-minute speech. Took me about 2.5 to 3 hours, all in visceral language, every breath, every underline. But we had no time for dress rehearsal that day. He was too busy. So we did our warm-ups in the mirror in the green room. Edge, arc, stature, all the things that people learn in this work. So that if you watch it, he walked out. It was the first time he'd read teleprompter. First time he ever read prepared remarks. And there was no dress rehearsal.
Wow.
Structure does not impinge. He is in the work. Some people can't even tell when he's reading because of the breath. I don't breathe like that. I teach that a song without a rest is not the same piece of music. So space has value. And you'll watch him breathe. And in that space right there, there's thinking time. There's control. So, yes, I was teaching him a new skill, but based on what he already knew as an elite athlete, the structure, the warm-ups, the attention to minuscule detail everybody else would ignore. And he's stunning. He's just magnificent.
So that's kind of what I was hoping. And it's a move from what you do to what you're being. And when you said that, I got all excited, and because that's the focus of all the work that I do in terms of the essence of us is the being part, and the doing is the visual or the visceral. I mean, the world expression of that being, but the being starts inside, and it's a choice of being, but most people make that choice by abdication, by accident, by habit, and they don't spend the time crafting that being that you're describing, which is beautiful.
And again, it's really important that your audience understand that I'm giving them technique, real technique. We don't know how to be us. It's quite simple. So when we learn to breathe in a conscious, loving breath, or learn to see the edge and arc of sound so I can drive my energy or use my eyes or see a period, now I have some tools I can work with. When we practice on a mirror, when we record and listen and watch with no judgment, we never get to say yuck, ever. When we create our brand, nobody knows your voice is a brand. And it's not just the vocal voice, it's the inner voice. How do I want to be known?
Well, I love that little V and capital V thing that you did, because that the capital V is the sum total, and it's the choices and growth that you help people discover. You've referred a number of times to different programs and the 7-point warm-up and several other things, and I know I didn't say that exactly right. But I know that people are going to be curious about where these things are, where can they find this kind of information, find out a little bit more. Maybe they want a little bit more Arthur. So where's the best place to go? Maybe there's 2 or 3 places to see Dwayne's retirement speech or the 7-part warm-up or the different things that you've referred to if they want to find out a little bit more and you know, have some of this excellence and training rub off.
I'm glad you used the word excellence, because I don't care about perfect. I only care about excellence, because as you know, perfect doesn't let us make a mistake. And excellence recognizes mistakes must occur as we're learning to grow and release. And so there are 2 places. One, of course, my website, vocalawareness.com. And the other is people can write to my team at support at vocalawareness.com. And my marketing director, Genesis Castillo, will direct you to the right place. Or if anybody wants to reach me, they can reach me through Genesis at support. And everything I've spoken of, all my courses, my programs are there. I'm beginning next month a new mastermind program, and it's only open to 20 people, and because I need to keep them intimate so that we can really do the deep work. So if anybody's interested, let Genesis know. And something with my birthday in January, I turn 80 this next January, and with my birthday this past January, I created the Vocal Awareness, it's a journal on mastery, the Vocal Awareness Mastery Journal. And I'm quite proud of it. It's a compendium online where you teaches the principles of this work. There are stories, anecdotes, philosophies. But then there's something called 168 hours. 7 times 24. How do we spend
it? Right. Right.
And on each day, there is an inspired quote of mine at the top or some other quote. And it's structured like a week at a glance from like 6:30 in the morning to whatever at night. And you strategize your week. You strategize your goals, your timelines. And you put it there because we're all aspiring. We're all transitioning. But we put it off and we put it off. But if you put it into your 168, you have to show up. And you don't show up for literature if your class begins at 10, at 10:15. And you don't skip the 1 o'clock history class because somebody told you got to show up. But here you have to teach yourself how to show up. So I love the Mastery Journal because it becomes your accountability partner. And again, structure does not impinge, it liberates. So send people to my website. Send people to support at vocalawareness.com. And Genesis will take really good care of them. She's a great cruise director and knows how to lead the journey. And we go back to how we started. I want to change the world through voice and help all those I work with to achieve their own enlightenment and enjoy their own empowerment. It's not just a philosophy, it's an action.
I love that concluding idea because you've introduced terms like allowing and conscious loving breath, and you've given substance to things that we do unconsciously. The breathing and the things that we do then do with an affect instead of the way that they were intended. And just the idea of annotating your breathing and speaking, it brings such attention. And you talked about the depth of listening, the superficial layer and the layer inside and the little V and the big V. Such interesting stuff. I want to really thank you for sharing these ideas and bringing the depth of the power of each of us claiming and being who we really are to the show today, Arthur.
And if you were to look back at the beginning of this and look back at the end of this, look how consciously attuned you are in these last couple of moments and how intentional you were. And you were in what I call your deeper listening. You were tuned into you, not for any other reason than to embody the best of you, because you learned a couple of cool things. And for your audience, recognize, because Kellen embodies mastery, recognize how he applied, even in a simplistic way, some of what we were speaking about today. That was really lovely, Kellen. Thank you.
Well, thanks for being here. Listeners, I want you to really take this to heart. This has been a masterclass in possibility, and we've just scratched the surface of what it truly means to own the truth of your being, the truth of your voice, the expression of the authentic power that you really have as a person. So anyway, thanks for being here with me, and I really appreciate being with me today, Arthur.
God bless. It's my privilege. Thank you very much, Kellen.
You're welcome. So I want you to take this. I want you to listen again, because I've had the privilege of talking to Arthur several times, not just on shows. He had a podcast episode too, and then this here. But his work is intentional, and it's very empowering. And his list of people that he's worked with is long and impressive. But more impressive is to learn the truth that you have power beyond your expectation, beyond what you're using to enjoy, to have fun with, and to create your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.